listening to Muslimish Freethinkers, a podcast dedicated to fostering conversations on matters of faith and disbelief.
This is Adnan from the Detroit Muslimish chapter. I am the president of the chapter, and today we are meeting for our first ever book club meeting. And we will be discussing Edouard Said's book, Orientalism. We will talk about the book, and we'll have some reflections about it. And then hope you'll enjoy it. I'll introduce the book first by saying that this is one of the few influential books, you know, that have discussed the relationship between the Orient and the West. It is really, you know, eye-opening to how, you know, things we take for granted, you know, have a deeper meaning than what we think, especially in terms of the relationship, especially power relationship between the West and the East. What I want to focus on today, from my own perspective, is how Orient is actually a Western thing. It reflects, or it corresponds more to how the West views the Orient as to what in reality is the Orient. So I think Edouard Said did a very good job utilizing anthropology, philology, language studies to illustrate how a field as huge as Orientalism came to be. We will discuss aspects of the book, and probably we'll also focus, if others agree, on modern implications of Orientalism, because it seems like there is still some way that Orientalism is still being used to explain the Orient and events in the Orient, especially what's happening right now in terms of the Arab Spring and these or that things. So at this point, I would like to ask my friends if they have anything to say so we can start the conversation.
Hello, my name is Wissam, and I'd like to express my excitement for starting this book club in Muslimish Detroit. We are sitting right now in Qahwa place, which is a Yemeni coffee place that imports coffee from Yemen. The servings that they have, a variety of different servings of coffee and tea. Each one is tastes different depending on which area from Yemen it is. Such one country out of the Middle East has so much variety to offer in their traditional drinks that a person who belongs to the country would not know half of the drinks offered here. And then we expect, you know, the West expects to have one impression and one knowledge about an area that extends, the Orient extends from Morocco all the way to India and Indonesia, Malaysia, you know. So definitely another reflection before we enter into the subject of Orientalism is is Edouard Said himself. The need of Arab Americans, the need of Muslim Americans, the need of immigrants who have immigrated from the East to the West in general to translate the civilization from the East to the West. the need of intellectualism. I mean, Edward Said is a master's and in art and a doctorate, you know, in philosophy, has taught in Harvard and Princeton and Yale and Harvard, wrote multiple books, and one Palestinian-American intellectual changed the discourse about the East-West relationships. Imagine if we have 100 intellectuals or two, you know. This is so much needed intellect to be presented. I hope that Muslimish will play a part in encouraging this discourse and encouraging that dialogue. Jinan Raouf, one of our directors in Muslimish, she actually has focused on Edward Said in the last Muslimish conference in New York 2017 in June 21. The lecture is on YouTube. She focused on Edward Said as a person who has introduced a new discourse when talking about the East, and she wanted to go parallel to that position and introduce a new discourse about the woman in the East, the woman in within even Islam, and presenting a different dialogue about them, the women before Islam. She focused on the discourse about women before Islam, how they are represented by most Islamic scholars as oppressed women, while there were elements of feminism and power in the movement of women before Islam that might have been suppressed by Islam, or it might have been suppressed by the Muslim politics afterwards, or the Muslim interpreters, because even during the life of the early life of the Prophet, the early life of Islam, women played an integral part in the establishment of Islam. I mean, given the role of Khadija, she spoke about that. I'm not going to take her words, so I refer you back to her lecture about this subject. It was very inspirational to me. That actually pushed me to gave birth in my mind to expression that I call reimagining Islam. We always reinterpreted Islam, but actually sometimes we have to reimagine it. Given the few sources that we have, the few authentic sources that we have to restructure sometimes a new narrative based on this these authentic pictures that we have. So this subject is very, I mean, we are in Dearborn right now. I mean, Dearborn is a paradox of East and West. So before we go into the subject, I'd like to Fatima to jump in and
I'm Fatima, and I'm very excited to be at the first ever book club and with Muslimish. So I have a different take on Orientalism. I come from education, and I always read research and curriculum in education that uses Orientalism as a theoretical framework. That's something that I'm very familiar with, and that has been the focus of this book. So I guess today we're going to be providing different perspective, different views of the book, I guess, of different usages of the book, I guess, and I'm looking forward to that.
I think one thing that I would like to talk about is Edward Said said that what Europe felt about Islam has to do with how Islam was the dominant power at the time, right? Islam was controlling everything in the up until like the 6th or 7th century. They blocked Europe. They were the central power, like they were an empire. And that actually played a role in how they viewed Islam. And part of it is fear, part of it is being awed by Islam. And I wonder how this also applies to how we actually now view the West. Now we are on the other flip side of the equation, where the West is dominant, most cultured, most scientific, kind of control the whole world. And how we view the West right now mirrors how the West viewed Islam when Islam was and it's glory days, you know. Part of what Edouard Said said is that, the outsider who is kind of like becomes a danger because you don't know nothing about it, allows you to create these stories about them. So I wonder if we also do the same now, because Europe is a dominant and the West is dominant. So might not we be doing the same thing, looking at the West by a lens that is distorted by our own fear and our own, let's just call it, feel of inferiority, because they are the most advanced culture right now. So I would like to apply this to what's happening right now and see if we are actually can benefit from Orientalism, but reversed to us, applied to us. So I don't know what you guys think.
You touch upon something that is really interesting, the science, right? And how the West used science, mm-hmm. I guess. And a lot of Edouard Said's book, a lot of his analysis is based on that, and is how the West, especially England at the beginning, how they went into Egypt and how they went into the East, mm-hmm. Egypt, India. And they went with that idea of science, right? They didn't go, if I'm making sense, they didn't colonize, I guess, those areas because of religious beliefs or because of, that belief of superiority, but that belief of superiority was based on science. Something that reminded me, maybe this is going to make more sense, I think chapter one, maybe 30-something to 40-something, we have the book right now. He talks about the superiority, the feeling of the West, being superior and the East being inferior. So when I read that section, that reminded me of the eugenics movement. Mm-hmm. And how at the time, and it was a scientific belief. It was later, of course, we know that it was pseudoscience. But that's what Balfour, for example, the author Balfour, he was the member of the Eugenic Society of Britain. And he chaired the conferences of the eugenic movements. So he would look at the East, at the Orientals, through that lens. And that's why he spoke a lot about, he was perceived to be talking about the superiority of the West compared to the to the Orientals, and so just going back, looking a little bit further, it's interesting to find out is how that that relation was based on science, or his belief was based on science, or what he believed was scientific beliefs at the time. If that makes sense. Have you heard about am I making sense, or do you, yeah.
Yeah. I agree. I think speaking about eugenics as a movement, for some time it was based actually on people who said this is science, and this is as a psychologist myself, come from the field of psychology. Psychology played a role in that by measuring people's intelligence and claiming that people are different because of the size of their skull or this or that. Edouard Said does a good job of showing how these different disciplines around the time in Europe were used to also strengthen Orientalism as a field, especially like comparative anatomy, where those people have different skulls, so that they are inferior and they are in need of us to show them the way, and as he said, Balfour, even he was speaking to the House of Lords in England, and you cannot just skip it, how he felt toward saving the Orient from itself, from its backwardness, getting it back to to the days where it was full of magic and tales, when you look at TV and see Oriental stories of flying carpets and the thing you rub, the land. Yeah. So they wanted to restore a much or less threatening image of the East, because, as I said, they based their image based on the threat they felt from Islam at the time. So they wanted to eliminate this. And I think they used the science that was available at the time. And that's a good point, because it was almost everyone believed in these facts, that those are people are like, even Darwin, he called people as savage, who don't belong to the West, especially people who found in Africa or in these countries. He called them savages. I mean, even though he believed in evolution, but he still believed that the pinnacle of evolution is the Western white male, you know. But I also wonder, at some point, Edward said that most cultures do that also. Most cultures demonize the outside and kind of, you know, aggrandize themselves, you know. You know, I wonder if also Muslims, we have an expert here, and like if Muslims did, like, ever did that, which I believe they did, kind of like look at others in a way that they are below them, even though we did not call them like that. Prophet Muhammad actually talked of equality in front of God, but I believe it's a natural progression for cultures to do that, to demonize the other and to make themselves like the pinnacle of creation and everything, like Muslims do. They feel like we are the reason of creation. We are the top dog.
So that is the difference, you know, between what Edward Said's analysis, again, of those people who colonized those areas. It was that they used what they believe was science, compared to those who used religion.
Yes.
So before we, you know, take it to, you know, we give it to Wissam, you reminded me of the, you know, the Spaniards, right? When
yes.
Christopher Columbus came to this land, to the, you know, all this land, the Spaniards honestly believed that it was God himself who had given you know, them all these lands for them to, you know, to modernize, I guess, or to, and to convert into Christianity. They really believed that. You know, that's why they took the gold. They really believed that they were entitled, that it was God himself who gave it to them.
Like a mission.
And that they gave them all these souls, all right, to convert into Christianity. So that's a you know, it's the same way to colonize, as, you know, people, but these people did it on, you know, on religious beliefs. I'm sure, you know, we know already Islam, they did the same thing, but Edward Said's analysis shows a different perspective. You know, it was more, again, pseudoscience, you know, pseudoscience, but it was from a different, you know, scientific perspective. It was not religious anymore.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I think what's different here is the scope. I mean, the scope of what happened is much different than any epoch in civilization. You know, at one point, Europe controlled about 80% of the earth or something like that, which never happened to any other culture. And not only that, there was economic, scientific, cultural advances that allowed this to happen. I think, yeah, you know, science is if you mean by science, you know, again, you know, is it the deal breaker? Is it the difference that allowed them to do that? Because I think that's what the narrative in the West is, that science, we're scientific, they're not. And they're like one of the things that, you know, like, when people say the Oriental mind, they basically mean that it's not scientific. And what I feel sometimes is that it's not Western people who say that. People who are from the Orient now speak of Oriental mind, and kind of as if they absorbed these terms and they apply it to our thinking. You know, and I wanted to bring this to what's happening right now, because sometimes you look at what's happening in the Arab world, especially the Arab Spring, and you can't help but feel it's hopeless. This is how the Orient is going to be. We're not meant to have democracy. So as if, as Edward Said said, that despotism and lack of democracy and lack of scientific method are core definitions of the Orient. So, but I think we're going ahead of ourselves, because I want to ask Wissam, because as I was saying earlier, Wissam, that all cultures do that, you know. They tend to demonize the other, and feel good about themselves to justify what they do. Mission. You mentioned the Spaniards' mission to open America, convert. What about the mission that Muslims had? Maybe you can talk to us a little bit about it, because I'm sure we had one like that.
I mean, I think what makes... I mean, that's true. But what makes the subject of Orientalism a more relevant subject is the dominance of the Western society today. We don't need to worry about Islam as a dominating force anymore. I want to talk about a point that is so relevant to us, which I haven't seen in the book, but I might be mistaken. It's the idea of how Orientalism was exported to us by the dominance of the Western culture and sciences, that we became Orientalists ourselves.
I'm just telling you.
Did you miss that?
Yes, I was telling her.
So for those who are hearing the podcast...
Can I say something, guys?
Yes, Ibrahim.
So,
we have Ibrahim here from New York with us on the speaker. He's going to be saying his opinion.
Go ahead, Ibrahim.
So I wanted to say that I feel probably different than most people about this book. Most people in Muslimish, at least, or most of my friends who are intellectuals or like, you know, or have read the book, because it's a difficult book. I don't like the book. I don't like it for multiple reasons. And I'm going to try to explain to you what my thinking. One, I feel it uses very difficult language. And I'm not sure if this is just me who's like, because I'm an English second languager or because of the topic, I expected it to be more readable. But I remember, and I read this like maybe years ago, like 3 or 4 years ago, if not more, it was very difficult to go through because the language was very academic and almost, it wasn't very friendly. And I wasn't sure if that was just because it needed to be so or because of like, because of the author's need to show off his English language skills, which I think is, you know, it's not, I wouldn't put it in the positive column, basically, in my book, in my opinion. The second thing is that it felt to me when I read the book, and I could be wrong, maybe I didn't understand it correctly, but it felt to me like the ultimate Arab justification manifesto. It's just a whole bunch of poor us, they fucked us up, they are bad and we're good, and they just threw a language about us, and we ended up believing this language. How poor are we? We are so poor, poor us. It's just annoying. And it's everything that's wrong with Arab mentality. It's everything that's wrong with Arab society. It's people who don't want to fix their own problems and just want to blame the West for it. But what about, you know, I feel personally that the best thing that happened in Egypt in its modern history was the French occupation in 1798. The best thing that happened to Egypt in its modern history was the French invading. Because it was in the Dark Ages, and the French brought it back to civilization. They brought Egypt back, they brought a printing press, they studied Egyptology, they brought the knowledge of the ancient world back. It was a great step for humanity, but this idiot, I'm sorry, I'm going to stop. But he's like the occupiers. Well, you needed to be occupied. You were like shit. You needed someone to bring you back to the modern world because you were living in the Dark Ages. And maybe you should say thank you, actually, instead of, like, complaining about, like, you know, or try to make yourself better. Try to pick yourself up. Don't just complain about what the West have done to you. Make yourself worth keeping alive. Okay, that's it. I'm done.
Thank you, Ibrahim.
Thank you, Ibrahim. Yeah. Are you on? Well, I think I have to say two things to the two remarks you made. Yes, the language of the book is very difficult for two reasons, I think. One of it is it's an academic subject, so it's really academic. It's not easy to grapple with it. You have to use a lot of academic words. But also another reason, it's my own opinion, is that Edouard Said belongs to a school of thought that is more not American way of reading history or reading philosophy. It's more like a European. Michel Foucault, Derrida, those philosophers who are very dense. And I don't know, I think these people make it their mission to write difficult. I can never follow them. And I don't know why it is. I can read any book, an American writer, I can follow them. So I agree with you. The subject matter is difficult, but I think he also like could have done better. I don't know, especially you know, the way he kept repeating himself sometimes. He is influenced by Foucault and those philosophers who are kind of considered continental, like European. The other thing that I want to answer, I actually disagree with you, Ibrahim, about. I don't think he's talking about Orientalism to blame anyone. I think he's talking about Orientalism to say that there was a way of perceiving the East based on assumptions related to power and related to, you know, how the West wanted to see the Orient. I don't think he was saying, like, all of our problems are because of the Orient, because of Europe or occupation, but he actually was critiquing academically a field that was based on describing how the West wanted the Orient to be instead of actually going to the Orient and letting the Orient speak for itself. You know, we were just with Sam earlier, I don't know if you heard him, was talking about how diverse even is the coffee in Yemen, you know. And I think they made categories and they just tried to apply it everywhere in the Orient, and that's what he tries to say, that those are not the Orient. The Orient is much more complex and much, you know, I don't know if you heard what I said earlier. Islam in itself is much more complex and is a reason for the West to see Orient as it did. But I don't think that he was actually using it in the ways some of the people do nowadays. Well, they blame everything on the West, which I don't agree with. But I think he was critiquing a field that is based on faulty assumptions and relations of power. I don't know. Let's.
Can I say something to that?
Yeah, go ahead, Brian.
So I thought, first of all, the Arab world or the Orient didn't have either the means nor the will to describe itself. It didn't see itself as something weird, but it is something weird, especially after, I think there's a big difference between Europe before and after the Renaissance, before and after, like, you know, the 1600s and 1700s. So the interaction between the East, the Orient, and Europe before Renaissance was really all about the Crusades. And when it happened in the Western Hemisphere, it was the conquistadors and invading South America. But Europe, in my opinion, after the Renaissance, became, yes, of course, it became a colonial power that occupied lands, but it brought something else. There was, in my opinion, something useful about European occupation, which is bringing the methods of scientific thinking to the lands of the Orient that were really literally living in dark ages because of the restrictions from the Ottoman Empire and from other Muslim rulers in the East, all over knowledge and over learning, over girls' education, over everything. So I look, for me, I don't, like, it seems to me that the book is talking about the Orient from someone's perspective, someone who believes himself to belong to this and has some sort of internationalistic or pride feelings about this entity and wants to, like, make it great, which I don't have. I don't have, like, this sense of belonging to a failed culture. I see progress as the goal in itself. So if working with France or England is going to bring me information, is going to help me make the life of the people better, then I am for that. Yeah, you know, that's why I think that's a good thing. But, like, just because, like, you know, well, there are the others and they're they're from Europe, and we're not really like brown, and we believe in the sand god. Like that doesn't, you know, like that's not enough reason not to work with people who can bring the knowledge. And it seems to me also that the book is completely focused on like them and the us. And it's a very old way of thinking. It's very 1960s way of thinking about things. And I just don't think it's a very good way of thinking about the world.
Yeah, I think that we are discussing the subject of Orientalism. Maybe we need a podcast at a national level about that. And, you know, so Brahim, I think we need to organize a podcast just about this subject rather than the book. We can talk about the subject more generally. Yeah, I agree with you that I'm against the mentality of victimization. And I see the good things that came out of the evil of colonialism. There's certainly some good things that came out of it. But I think, again, the subject of Orientalism is the general trend how the West views the East. And I mean, we're talking about European Orientalism. If you read any like book of history of Islam by an Orientalist, you'll be appalled. The depiction, I don't know if you've been exposed to some writings like this. It's talking about something completely inaccurate and almost degrading. I almost feel offended by some of those writings. And then you have the American Orientalism, which is another problem, which has created the modern, you know, Islamophobia, etc. Now we know also what Faisal Matar calls the Islamophobia phobia. We also recognize that issue. We recognize also the left apologism. And all these needs to be discussed. But on going back to the subject of the book, how relevant it is, which was written in 1978, how relevant it is today, I think, number one, there is Orientalism that has been exported to us, and the people in the East, they have a negative view of the East.
And themselves.
Themselves. Yes. They have a negative view of themselves.
And that, they should have a negative view of the East. Like, here's the part that I'm trying to say, is that this negative view of the East sometimes, I know it's comical and it's offensive, but at least it was their try of trying to come up with something, with the tools that they had at the time. It was at least an attempt. It was better than nothing that the Arab world was doing. The Arab world was doing nothing. So if someone else if you refuse to describe yourself, and someone else describes you, that's not their fault. You didn't describe yourself. So why are you blaming them for describing you? That's my point.
I think, Edouard Said, just in defense of him, I think he was a humanitarian foremost. He was a real humanitarian. And I disagree with you, Ibrahim, that...
A humanist.
Thank you. I think I disagree with you when you say he wanted to say us and them. No. He actually said that creating a field such as Orientalism was actually to create us and them. And that's what his issue with, is that he didn't look at this, at the Orient, as a diverse area, as a collection of different people and cultures. They wanted to create or designate a place where they are and us. I don't think he was doing that, at least the way I read the book. And actually, he actually said he is a humanist, and he believes that people, you know, like, he believes in the humanist doctrines, you know, and he's actually an atheist, by the way. He's not a religious person or even theist person. But in his defense, I don't think, you know, he actually wanted to say there is us and them. He actually said that Orientalism as a field wanted to create this schism to show that there is a place that is outside of Europe that is full of all the negative things that Europe don't like about itself, like, you know, despotism, you know, lack of scientific method, and this or that. So I think he was actually criticizing this idea.
We can give a different insight. So
Fatima is speaking.
So growing up, I grew up in Latin America. And so I had an Oriental view of the Orient. So the first time I went to Lebanon, I was expecting to see what Edward Said talks about, you know, that the West, you know, the way that, you know, the West portrayed actually the East. I was surprised to find out that a lot of things were not there. It was more complex, as you said, than the, but a lot of what the West described, you know, described the Oriental, I guess the Orient, I think I saw it there as well. So I think they were onto something. It's just it was incomplete. Yes. And of course, as I grew older and traveled more, I guess I was able to realize, I mean, more of what Edward Said is talking about, that it's definitely more complex than that. And you're not going to grab a teapot, the one that my mom had we didn't use it, but I used to grab it and rub it and see if a genie will come out of the teapot. When I was a little, we used to play that with my friends. And yeah, so it was very disappointing when the genie never came out. So,
Brahim, you want to say something?
Brahim
So, before Brahim comes back in, Brahim, you want to say something? Yeah. So Fatima reflected on her own experience as she grew up in Venezuela. Then she transferred to the East, and she were exposed to that Eastern culture as presented to her by the West. And then I want to give an example here, just to bring the book into life today. So we have, you know, immigrant populations focus on certain areas. So I work in education, you know, Fatima works in education, and one of the manifestations of Orientalism comes in when a teacher who has grown up and been educated in America, for example, has to be now the teacher of a group of students who are ESL students, English as a second language students, English language learners who have immigrated here recently from various countries, maybe from Syria, from Yemen, from Lebanon, from Palestine, from Somalia, from Iran, from Pakistan. I used to, many times in discussions with teachers, I notice Orientalism within. It's not intentional. It's just intellect. It's just a saqafayan. It's just this is the culture of Orientalism in America that's reflected through its writings, its movie industry, its theaters, its news industry. They want to paint this side of the world with one color, simplify it into four bullet points that needs to be dealt with. And it's not that. It is as intricate as a Persian rug, and as colorful as you know, an Indian spice market. I mean, they. I am using Orientalist expressions, but it's not that simple. I myself don't understand it. There is there was a lady that called me today to invite me to speak at a university. And, you know, the topic I wanted to present, because she suggested some topics. You know what topic I want to present? I want to present a topic called 10 Things the West Needs to Learn from Islam, and 10 Things Islam needs to learn from the West. I mean, what the Islam needs to learn from the West is pretty obvious. But but what I really wanted to present is something that is not many speak about. And I'm not speaking from an Islamic perspective. I'm speaking from a free thinker's perspective, from academic perspective. What things really are inhibited in this inherited, you know, heritage? At the end of the day, Islam didn't come from vacuum. It came from thousands of years of heritage. What that heritage can present to us. I mean, when my grandmother walks into an immigration office or a doctor's office, may she rest in peace, you know, there is an impression. But nobody knows the thousands of lines of poetry that she memorizes and the history that she has with dealing with the Ottomans and the French and the Israelis and the, you know, that and the rich knowledge and raising, you know, over 10 kids within, you know, that I lost count the last time I counted, but and you know, and that rich personality in front of you that is equivalent to multiple PhDs. It's not seen. There is one picture painted. This is probably a farming background, illiterate woman that's coming who does not speak English, who does not read, you know. So that's what we're talking about. Nevertheless, I mean, definitely victimization, if Orientalism is interpreted into victimization and blaming the West, I'm definitely with Ibrahim and being against that. Because like Fatima said, they are onto something. It is not 100% inaccurate. I mean, every stereotyping is not 100% inaccurate. I mean, it is human nature, you know.
But you know, Edouard Said was trying to say Orientalism had a job, had a task, which is to simplify the Orient and to make it more manageable, as you said, like a bullet point, and to present an Orient that, you know, that is easy to, you know, accept and not be scared of anymore. So yeah, when you do that, when you describe, you know, what struck me, as Edouard Said was saying, as if the Orient was some kind of piece of matter that needed to be described by a scientist, and the idea was that they will be from the outside, very objective, describing something inert. Well, it's not inert, as you said. It's a very dynamic place, full of history. The West itself were surprised to realize that it's not only the land of the Bible. There were thousands of religions that date before the Bible and before Islam. Even themselves, they were surprised to find that. You know, and I think that actually surprised them, because the view they had of the East is that biblical times, you know, that's what they had in mind. And then they came to see India and China and all these countries. So I think it's more dynamic. And I think a criticism of Orientalism is that actually it's trying to make something less dynamic, kind of like, you know, sound bites that you can memorize, you know. And I go back to Issam, it's very strong. Orientalism is that we actually use the terms ourselves as Orientalists. People who live in the Oriental speak of the Oriental mind, or speak, I was telling Fatima a little while ago that, oh, we can't have democracy because Orientals do not deserve, or they're not made, or they don't appreciate democracy. You know, and I think we actually hear it every day, you know, what happened in the Arab Spring and the failures, let's admit it, some of the failures we've seen made people, again, including me sometimes, have doubts about the possibility that the Orient or the Arab world can ever do anything. And actually that's part of Oriental language, is that this is a place that is meant to stay as it is because of certain innate features. And that's what Edouard Said didn't like, because that's not the case. And again, I'm not saying that I want to live in the past, but that's not the case up until the mid-centuries, when Europe was really scared of Islam, because Islam was the superior culture at the time. And when you're afraid of someone, you demonize it. That's what we do. I agree with Ibrahim right now, because we are the weak culture. We are the people who are backward, let's call it as it is. We are afraid of the West, and we might have all these myths about it. The same thing happened to the West, I think, because the first thing, or the first meeting they had with Islam was of a threat, because Islam reached Spain and even France, and Turkey was there. So that's part of it. But to end my point is that monologue. I don't agree with you that it's not meant to play the victim's role, because that's not what I think Edouard Said meant. He meant, as Wissam said earlier, to open the conversation about a subject as wide as this, you know. So if you're still there, Ibrahim, we're not sure.
I'm still there.
The
mic is yours.
Well, I guess what I'm trying to say is that it's the East or the Middle East or the what used to be the leftover of the Ottoman empires or whatever is left of the Middle East and South Asia. We have not been able to produce a new modern identity for ourselves since after World War One. I mean, it's been 100 years now, and since the fall of the Ottoman Empire, and we have accepted the national identities, the modern state national identities that have been created by the European countries, and now they are the norm. We have not been, and in the 70s and 80s, the rise of the Muslim identity as an alternative for this national identity, because it failed. I think the national identity in the Middle East failed because it wasn't, unless you're talking, and I have to really separate a country like Egypt, for example, where the national identity is really easy to create by the European measures, to a country like Jordan or Saudi Arabia or Yemen or any other country in that region, because they're really not real countries. I'm sorry, in my opinion. They're made-up countries. There's a French man and an English man sat down with a map and a pen, and that's what he ended up with. But we ended up accepting these identities. We have failed to create new identities that are modern identities for ourselves, and now we're complaining about them. So, we have to create something else, and that's what my issue is. We need to create our story. We need to create our own answers to questions because we just keep saying no, 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 poor us, no, no, no. Well, what the hell do you bring to the table? You have to bring something to the table as an alternative. So I want to, I feel that we have not created this alternative. And that's a failure. And it's been 100 years since the end of World War One now, since that new identity has been created and this new world order has been formed. And we are just, all we're at for 100 years is just complaining about how we've been treated. It's ridiculous. And I don't understand It's ridiculous. And the funny part is, we've actually been able to convince the West to adapt that narrative, and let's not talk to them about human rights. They're not there yet. What the hell? Well, how could this become the norm now? It's infuriating for me. That's where I stand. That's why I don't like this book, because this book has become, and I know a lot of people in the group love this book, and I understand that there's a lot of, it explains a lot of things. Yes, it does. I understand that. And I understand it, but It has become now the new ideology, in a way. It represents some sort of like a Quran like kind of book, where like it's treated with some sort of reverence. People like, oh, like Edward Said. I remember when Edward Said died, people had candles in the street corners in New York. I was sitting in a freaking Mexican restaurant, and there were like candles and pictures of Edward Said on 11th Street and Avenue A, and I couldn't believe it. And I'm like, why? Really? This is like, I mean, I was happy. Part of me was happy. Part of me was proud a little bit. But I read the book, and I hated it. I hated that book. I can't understand why everybody loves it. I'm like, what are you talking about? This is, why do you think this is good? Okay, I'm done.
Sure. Welcome to the book club about Orientalism.
Well, we're going to end it with Ibrahim, but I think as we got that the book brings a lot of different opinions and perspectives, and I think if a measure of a success of a book, if it does this, I think that's a successful book, because it brings so many different perspectives and so many polarization. So I think that's why I like the book. And I know you don't like the book, but anyways, we need to end it. That was our first book club meeting. And I appreciate the input by everyone, including Ibrahim, who joined us over the phone, and Wissam and Fatima. And hopefully we will be doing more podcasts like that and more book meetings.
Thank you for listening to Muslimish Freethinkers. Do let us know what you think of this episode at facebook.com/Muslimish. Don't forget to visit us at Muslimish.org.